You should be warned, the upcoming episode will be full of unfiltered, off-the-cuff discussion. As such, you should consider this your spoiler warning.
Hello, I'm Kyle.
And I'm Ryan.
And when our powers combine, we form
Experience Grind Podcast.
The podcast where, better or worse, good or bad, we give you our honest... God damn, I'm fucking it up. This is the second time in a row I fucked up our intro, man.
You've been fucking up bad.
And I'm not even drunk yet. I'm just excited, I tell you that. I'm very excited because today's a huge day, man.
It's a good save.
Yeah.
Good
well, save. I am.
Cause... Not in confidence, you're just excited.
No, I'm very excited. I just got my mind blown, very literally. We're here. Yeah. We drove almost 5 hours. We're on the outskirts of Chicago. We came up to the Block Interval Studios. We're joined here with Daniel.
Hello.
David Allen. We'll just go with Daniel.
You can go by Dan.
Yeah, we'll go with Dan.
Sure.
Dan's graciously invited us in to talk about his game he's working on. This is huge for us. We're seeing something before it's ever out, man. Usually our experiences are well after the media has been completed and everybody else has gone through it. So he's graciously allowed us in. We've checked it out. We've actually played a rough build of it. It's a VR game. Virtual reality for all you weirdos out there who don't know. God, what is it when you just use the first two letters? What is that called?
Abbreviation?
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. It's not abbreviation.
Brief.
No,
like,
it's
initialism.
Yeah. I'm terrible. I'm very worked up, man. I've got to calm it down. So, Daniel.
You're a glass case of emotion.
I am, man. Thank you very much, first and foremost, for having us out here, man.
Yeah, no problem. Thank
that was really cool. We're looking, I will say, for just first off the bat, before I had ever come down here, I was very unsure about VR. I think I'm fully on the VR boat now, just after
welcome
that short little demo,
welcome
man.
Welcome to the VR boat.
Spoiler alert.
Dude, it was crazy. I have never really experienced anything like that. Maybe on a par like when you would go to a theme park and you'd ride the movie ride that the seats move, but you're not in control of that. Being in control of it, of where you're looking, dude, that is, it's something else, man. Like, so, I mean.
I'm okay with just the experience by itself, too.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I don't know anything about the Oculus at this point, but you start off in that theater.
Mm-hmm.
Is that just like the menu? So like
no,
anytime you start
again,
that's something you guys did. Just that theater alone, looking around, was pretty insane. Like I spent a good few minutes just in that theater, looking at my seat, looking at the cup holders, everything.
Yeah. I didn't even look at the theater. I was so excited to get the thing. Oh, and I didn't know I could look around in the theater.
Yeah. Well, it was very intentional because we're transitioning from an old one form of medium to a new form of medium, and I think a lot of people who are new to VR who aren't thinking what's coming 5 years down the road maybe need some kind of parallel to understand where this kind of picks up from the previous medium. So I think it was for me it was really important to put the player into theater because I'm trying to set the expectation. Okay, you're gonna have a cinematic experience in what you're what you're going through.
It totally clicks on
and
that
it gets
too,
and we're gonna take you on a strange and alien journey. So let's start by something familiar and comfortable. And I feel very comfortable in a theater. I'm sat down. I've got, you know, a comfortable chair. Some of them you can lean back or put your feet up. I've got popcorn and maybe a pretzel and Coke, and everything's right with the world, and I'm going to sit for 2 hours and enjoy myself. And that's kind of what I was hoping to set the tone at the very beginning.
I would definitely agree. It totally works. I get it, especially now having you explain it. Like, I was like, okay, cool. We're in a movie theater, and then things kind of start.
Yeah.
But yeah, it totally works. So you mentioned an alien home world, or we're going to an alien world. So,
yeah.
I mean, my first question here, what is Life of Lawn like?
It's a VR story game that really strongly emphasizes, focuses story.
Okay.
And so the writing is what carries along the player. And but at its core, it's an attempt to carry the banner of really, really of the really immersive games that have come before it that weren't VR, and attempting to translate over many of those same feelings and interactions from a legacy of very immersive story-based games.
Okay, so like, give me an example. Like,
sure. A recent example would be Journey, created by
that
game company.
Love
and
that
it's
game.
A very evenly paced, beautifully scored, beautiful to look at kind of game. It's very contemplative at times. It's funny at times. It's a little scary at times, and ultimately makes you feel a certain way as you play it. And that's what we're trying to get to is giving players that kind of same emotional roller coaster as they go through the story. Earlier examples, you know, the earliest example of what I'm trying to do would be Another World or Out of This World from the Amiga Super Nintendo days, created by a guy named Eric Chahi, a French developer. And he really broke the mold as far as how games looked and played back then, and he basically created 2D rotoscoping game cinematics. You know, when in an era of pixelated games,
made it a lot more immersive.
It was very immersive, and the music and everything.
It's a beautiful game.
It's a beautiful game. Yeah, and anyone listening, I highly recommend going and pick. I mean, if you want to pick up an emulator, fine. I always recommend getting a Super Nintendo, picking up the game, playing it yourself.
Yeah, I think it's also
it's called Out of This World
on Steam too.
There is a 20th anniversary on Steam. So that's probably the oldest example, and then maybe one in the middle. I could say maybe Half-Life 2, Portal. Those games that were. If you think about the gameplay and how the gameplay worked in those, they really were attempts at creating something VR-like because you were Gordon Freeman, and Gordon Freeman never talked. And Gordon Freeman, you were Gordon Freeman. And there is no character called Gordon Freeman because that's just a stand-in for the player. And in this game, it's called Life of Lon, and you are Lon, and that's the stand-in. You're the stand-in for that character. So it's a lot like that in that way.
Mm-hmm. I'd compare it to BioShock personally. Is when I was playing, I got very reminiscent of BioShock, which is meant as a compliment.
Sure. That's fine. Yeah, I appreciate.
Well, I mean,
it
is an underwater game.
It is an underwater game. The similarities through the story will definitely be nothing like BioShock. Mm-hmm. But
I can make you kill him with a golf club.
There's not BioShock series is a very violent series, and we're shooting for something. I'm not going to say there isn't any violence in the game, but it's going to be kind of an all ages type of experience.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're saying it's very story driven. So I'm always driven to Heavy Rain, like David Cage style. Like,
yeah.
Where, I mean, there is gameplay in it, but it's all more.
It all serves a story.
Yeah. It's never really challenging gameplay,
right?
But there are things like this. So that's what I'm equating more to.
Yeah, I think the thing about Heavy Rain and many of its clones that have come after and attempted to do what Heavy Rain has done, but probably not as good.
Beyond Two Souls.
I have not played Beyond
it's
Two
really
Souls.
It's really bad.
It's not
really
bad.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. We'll agree on this one.
You could even say, you know, Telltale is kind of
the
children of the Heavy Rain type of game. Yeah. But you're absolutely right that with Heavy Rain, it was you are sort of acting out the story as the character. And I would say the only thing that's a little bit different in what we're trying to do than that is you will have more freedom of movement than you had in Heavy Rain. And you will have more sort of environment-based puzzles to solve as you move
forward. Well, and it's definitely, absolutely, hands down, way more immersive than Heavy Rain.
I take that as a high compliment.
Yeah, well, just and the simple fact that it's from the first-person viewpoint and, you know, moving my head. And it's mind-blowing. It's so hard to describe.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that has to be experienced.
Yes.
I think that's the big hurdle of VR is getting it out to the public and selling that idea without having them have the headset.
Right.
Is that something you're worried about?
No.
Like that it won't catch on because of that? Or?
No. Mobile VR will carry the first wave of VR enthusiasts or adopters, and then the PlayStation VR will pick up the rest.
That's what I'm thinking. Personally, that was my plan to see what PlayStation comes out with, because I know it will also be compatible with my PC, or that's what they've been hinting at.
The PSVR?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Very similar to the PlayStation Gold headsets and their new controllers, very easily compatible with a PC.
Oh, okay.
I have heard that.
But now,
it's not been confirmed, but I've heard that they're leaning that way.
I'll look into that. But yeah, we are planning on a cross-platform release.
Oh, that'd be awesome. Yeah. So that's great.
That would be...
That's how I would play it, probably.
Yeah,
that'd be good.
That would be Oculus Rift, HTC Vive, and Sony PlayStation VR.
So I mean, I'm going to jump around here. So because I think my question, one of these that I have, is very obviously answered. One of the things that I worried about before VR was I was worried that it was going to become sort of like a gimmick, like a lot how motion controls were like 5 years ago with the Wii. I don't think that anymore, as long as people experience a good VR. Because again, the capability of total immersion with this is just I see no bounds at this point.
Right.
Like, so I mean, yeah, it's obvious it's not going to be a gimmick. I think that there will be people that use it as a gimmick in certain ways. I'm looking forward to seeing what types of horror games come out. I think that'll be insane.
Yeah.
I have played one.
Yeah?
Yeah. A Vive game that was in development called... I'll have to look up the name or we can link it up. It's some kind of experiment or something like that. But anyways, you hold a gun in one hand and a flashlight in the other, and then the zombies sort of come at you.
Really?
You have to, you know, shine the flashlight. You got a limited amount of ammo. It was pretty intense. I actually clocked a guy in the face who was standing in the room because the chaperone system didn't pick up where I was, or I couldn't see the grid lines. But
yeah.
I was swinging at a zombie and I hit a guy. Like,
so that is one thing that I think... People, you mean you will need some space if you're going to play something like that.
Yes.
Is Life of Lawn going to be that? Or is there going to be more of a sit down with the controller?
Life of Lawn is intended to be a really high quality seated experience.
Okay,
that's
awesome.
Not something that's been attempted a whole lot, especially when it comes to story.
Mm-hmm.
And because we are going for it's kind of a pseudo cockpit. You're kind of like it's not really a full cockpit because it's not all the way around you. But we have some things built into it for comfort that make you not feel sick, like you mentioned.
Yeah.
It's mainly meant as a vehicle to take you across this long journey. So one of the things that I've been concerned about is like there's a lot of games that are coming out that require full body motion, and there are people that are not as able, and people in the hospital, and in wheelchairs, and all kinds of things. And with this game, you'll be able to hold a controller, tilt your head left to right, and that's basically, and you look behind you and things, but the goal is to sort of engage the sound and the sight senses in a really compelling way, and then you don't have to have the full range of motion to experience some really good experience in VR.
I think it's a smart move because you go the other way, you cut off a portion of your audience, and I think that's why you're talking about like the gimmick of motion control. The Wii was very successful because they were like, we're going to make this thing for everybody.
Right.
You know, it might not click on with everybody, but anybody can do it. And I think that's what you have in your game.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a very, very wise move.
But, and I like the fact that you're making it more of a sit down because my biggest complaint with the Wii is that as a gamer myself, I like to sit and play games. I'm not a moving guy. I hated playing the Wii Zelda because, I mean...
About it's Dance Dance Revolution.
That's a different thing. Like, I'm supposed to be dancing. But, like, when I'm playing Zelda, like, it's so annoying standing up. And then, especially when it doesn't have one-to-one motion.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's way more frustrating than it is fun. And at that point, like, what's the point?
Well, I think once you try hand-tracked standing VR, your opinion on that
and
might
again, that,
change,
yeah.
I think. Because it doesn't, you know, when you're standing there holding a Wii controller and you're swinging it around, you have some sense of connection to what's going on the screen, but I wouldn't say immersion by any stretch.
Exactly.
Whereas when you see your hands being tracked in space in front of you and you're standing up, the immersion, the sense of immersion is almost immediate, the sense of presence. So.
And so I want to come back to something you had said. So one of the things that I do have a problem with is I'm very motion sensitive. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of first-person games I can't play. And it's a bummer because I love first-person shooters.
Yes.
But some I just cannot get into because I get sick within like a few minutes of play.
Mm-hmm.
And that was another one of my big worries with VR. I did not experience that even for an instant in your build. And you've said you've done a lot of things to to work on that. What have you done? Like.
Yeah, it's a great question. My background is in user experience and design, and I've done a lot of testing in my career. And one of the big things I was focused on very early while we were learning about what we're doing here with this, because it hasn't really been done before, is understand what is it that causes what's called simulator sickness. And that's what the government has discovered. Simulator sickness is when you're inner ear is not interpreting what your eye is seeing and your inner ear is feeling. There's a disconnect there.
Yeah.
So, and that has to do, there's an evolutionary reason behind that. It has to do with vomiting poison out. You know, if you start to feel a certain way, your body's going to say poison, throw it out.
Okay.
So if there's something poisonous in your body, it might cause a disconnect between your ear and your eyes, and that's what causes you to want to throw up. So a big part of the early study into this game on my part was to read as much as I could on what causes this and how to mitigate this, and then to do a lot of testing in VR to try to understand what was causing this. So in our initial cockpit design, which you can see on that right there, you actually were looking straight out of the portal as if it was a portal in front of you. And I wanted to do that originally because I was like, wow, you could see so much of space like around you. We would like put the player out into the portal a little bit and it would sort of surround you. And I thought that would be a really cool way to experience that. The problem was it made us ridiculously sick all the time. We couldn't figure out, do we need to spin space? Do we need to have space static? Do we need to move it forward? And we just couldn't figure out a way to get it working. So what I was like, all right, well, why don't we try to turn the whole ship sideways so that you're sitting kind of on top of the ship and there's a bubble above your head and you have a horizon line around you. We did that. Immediately, the sickness went away.
Sure, improvement. Okay.
And so what we learned from that is when you have sort of a stabilization around you, when the things that are around you don't move and you have a horizon line, things can be happening above and around you and you can look up and get the full field of view effect of that, but look back down and have stability below you, and that's kind of what helps to mitigate that. Now, when you're moving around in the world in this game, you may or may not have noticed, some players haven't noticed, this semi-transparent half sphere that comes up around you, mm-hmm. and it kind of moves and shimmers and things.
Yeah, yeah.
I call that the stabilization semi-sphere, because I just thought that would make a funny way to. But anyways, what that thing does is it simulates the same kind of effect of what we have in the cockpit earlier, which is what we learned. We put that around the player as you're moving around, and it gives a sense of an anchor point that's not right on your immediate form, but like just is a few feet away from you. And then as you look beyond that, you can always kind of see something around you that sort of protects you and makes you feel like you're not falling off the planet or something.
Well, and what
like
was
that.
Nice too is that it shimmers and moves like water.
Yeah.
So it blends in and it's natural.
Yes.
Like your eyes
you can still enjoy the yeah. art of the game and it doesn't take away. You almost don't see it.
It's very nice. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, mm-hmm. I did notice it, but I could see how a lot of people wouldn't ever even notice
yes.
it because it does try to blend itself in naturally. But yeah. that's cool that it's there as a safety net
mm-hmm.
that I wasn't even picking up on. But that, I mean, yeah, I had no issues at all. And I'm incredibly sensitive to things like that. And
yeah.
So, I mean, you have done fantastic work in that field.
Thank you.
So I applaud you there, man.
Thank you.
As other sick people who have right. this, like, for real, like, it works amazingly well. Bravo, man. So you've assuaged that fear.
Did you always plan for Life of Lawn to be a VR game?
No, it was originally planned to be a side scroller, and the story was all entirely written. Actually, it's a trilogy. It's a game one of a trilogy.
Oh,
this is a complete yeah. story though. The first game is a complete story, but there are a number of dangling threads throughout the story that don't get answered until the second and third games. What was the question again? Did I plan this to be a VR game?
Yes, yeah.
No, and what ended up happening was I spent about 4 months bringing together a team to work on the side-scroller and funding it myself, and that was when we solved a lot of the concept art of Yep and the ship and the planet and that glowing orb mm-hmm. that I have a name for but I won't tell you, and then... And those core elements had been concepted out during the side-scroller phase, and I thought we were going to implement that way. I was working at Discovery at the time, making learning games for them,
mm-hmm.
and that contract dried up. I had to step out, go get another contract at Humana is where I ended up. And so during that break, I worked on another game called Transience, and you know, we got greenlit and things, but that fell apart kind of. And when that fell apart, I had been already doing a lot of research into VR, and I started to talk to the people that I'd been working with, Dave and Cortland, and talk about, can we do something for VR? Is that a possibility? And none of us had done anything with that. And so, I bought a DK2, and then... we got Oculus's attention. They sent us some DK2s.
And DK, that stands for DevKit.
That's the DevKit 2. Yeah. Yep. They sent us five of those and then got those kind of dispersed to the team. And we just said, we're going to make this. So that's kind of how the process moved along there. So we kind of started over from scratch in a way because we had to throw out all the old development and basically learn how to crawl in VR.
Okay. But the story from the side-scroller is still carried
same story.
Into this one? Okay.
Yes.
Nothing
same
changed
story.
On the story front? And you don't have to share that.
No, I know. I'm thinking through. What I would say changed was the ergonomics of the story. You know, originally this game's called Life of Lon. There was a character named Lon. He's been created. I mean, I have an animated character named Lon.
I've seen him. He's really cute.
Yeah, he's not in the game anymore. No, but no. I mean, this is Life of Lon minus Lon. so that is a kind of funny quirk of this game is that the main character is not in it, but you are the main character. So and he was written as a silent protagonist, so everything kind of works out.
Yeah.
So it transfers easier.
As
a silent protagonist.
None of Lon's actions in the writing have a whole lot to do with what happens in the game. It really is Lon is sort of an interloper on things that have been going on for a long time, and he's sort of stumbled across something. So
pretty much Commander Shepard in that giant orb was a Reaper?
I'm not gonna answer any questions about the giant orb.
So this little white dude, his name is
Yep.
Yep. Yep.
Yes.
Okay. So he's very cute.
Yeah.
And I could see him almost being a mascot.
Sure. He is.
The face of the game. And yeah. Especially now without Lon being there.
Right.
So is his role in the game a waypoint almost, I guess? A guide
his
through
role,
this world?
Yeah.
He's like your navvy?
His role is to be more than a navvy. His role is to be your friend and not be annoying.
So like Alex Vance more so.
Yeah, more like Alex Vance or Dog or something like that. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, there's been some precedent in the companion mechanic. You know, I go back to Out of This World / Another World. You have an alien sidekick there who helps you through the story. Secret of Evermore, you have a dog and, of course, Fallout, we'd be remiss to mention that. So there's a number of series that have this companion mechanic, and I think that's really compelling for VR because you are kind of existing in the same space as the companion.
Yeah.
So that really give you a strong chance to bond with the character. So we're going to be – a lot of the work in this game, you know, is going to be – building those interactions between the player and Yep, and how Yep helps you understand the world that you've
I think that's a brilliant way to do it, and it's a lot more of a show don't tell, which is
absolutely
I appreciate that so much more.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's just again it's more immersive, it's more world building. Yeah. You know, not having this press X flashing on
this.
Follow Yep. Yeah, I mean, it's going to be great.
Right.
So
I assume Yep's going to be kind of a silent partner, right? It's mostly going to be things you infer from his movement.
Yeah, he will have voice acting.
Oh, he will, okay.
But he will only say Yep.
Oh, okay.
He's much like Groot or R2-D2 or Chewbacca. Okay. Yeah. He speaks, but you don't know what he's saying, but you can totally tell what he's trying to say.
There's a lot going on within that one word.
Absolutely.
Okay, so what got you into games development? Because I know myself and I know Ryan, I mean, and from what I saw of your room, I mean, you're obviously a giant nerd too.
Yeah.
I mean, it's always that pipe dream. I've always wanted to do it.
Don't go throwing around that N word so easily. You don't know who you might offend with the nerd word.
No, it doesn't offend me.
So, but what drove you to take that step beyond?
Yeah, good question. Well, I have been wanting to make games my entire life. I mean, I have boxes of drawings. You know, I would create my own RPGs on paper, not pen and paper. I grew up in a pastor's son, so Dungeons
so D&D
and Dragons was evil.
Out.
Don't
yeah.
no D&D,
totally
no
out.
D&D.
Okay.
But I was allowed to play. You know, I've been a Final Fantasy fan since the first one. I've been playing since Final Fantasy I.
Quick sidebar: Are you excited about 15?
I am excited about 15. Awesome. I played the demo though, and I lost interest though in the demo, which just made me sad.
I had already watched
a video playthrough of the whole thing, so
I thought the demo was cool. It looked great.
Yeah.
I didn't like it until the final fight with the Iron Giant, when it was actually what the combat was going to
yeah,
be.
Yeah, I didn't get that
way
far.
Way more into it at that point.
Worry about that game is I'm not coordinated enough, because I'm used to the legacy of Final Fantasy games, which had a lot to do with strategy and figuring out what you're going to do in the battle and noticing the changes in the mechanics and reacting, whereas this is like, it's almost like an action game.
Yeah,
and
very Kingdom Hearts-esque,
And I am not as much of an action gamer as I am a role-playing gamer.
Obviously, yeah.
So, and that's, by the way, I'm just saying, as far as the type of game I wanted to create with Life of Lon, I didn't want to make a game that was too heavily focused on you must react a certain way. But anyways, getting back to the first question, though, you know, making games and stuff. I didn't have the chance to make my or to work on a game in a professional sense until I worked for Discovery. And I came up through a career of web design and front-end development and architecture and search marketing and all those things. And then I found this gig, this contract gig at Discovery Education doing working on their math tech book product, which is just basically a series of mini games designed to teach you math concepts. And so I looked at this and I took the gig and I looked at what the work was and I said, I'm going to try to work my way through all the major genres of game that I like and architecture. Tech learning games that are all of these different kinds. That's so I made a bunch of space games. I made a tower defense kind of hybrid game that taught absolute value and a pandemic game and a bunch. In the end, it was about a dozen games over the course of like 9 months. And that was sort of like my boot camp into how do you architect an engaging game experience. Knowing I've got a lot of experience playing games and like being a student of games and watching game creators talk and understanding that. But that was kind of my boot camp before this project. And then, you know, the other part of it is I guess if it's one of those things like if you have consumed enough of that media, you kind of understand what makes a good game.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know what I mean? It's sort of a taste thing. It's like if you've tasted a lot of whiskey, you know what good whiskey is. And if you've tasted a lot of games, you know what a good game is. And so, you know, it's sort of like I want to make a game that I would like. And I know that the bar would be very high for that. So I know that I have to shoot really high to meet my own standards.
And that's where I don't know, man. Like I said, you know, it's the pipe dream of all gamers to make their own. And I just...
More people should try. It's a lot of fun.
I applaud you for taking the step, man. That's fucking huge. And you're doing, honestly, like, really well with it, man. I mean...
Thanks.
I am thoroughly impressed with the short demo I played in there. Like, it is mind-blowing. I say that a lot, but I mean, I really keep coming back to that. It was... Dude, like when that fucking asteroid comes over and I can look up and look at that.
It was the perfect timing for me because that's when I figured out you could look behind you. So as soon as I turned around, there's a giant asteroid coming. I was like, oh, yeah, okay, it's missing. All right, okay. But no, it's mind-blowing. And what we played was maybe 15 minutes or so. Mm-hmm. Like it's relatively short, but in that 15 minutes, like that intro, like with the art assets you have now and the music is so good.
Yeah, I do want to take Dave Nelson.
Yes.
Like, I mean, I wish I could have met him because he is capturing fucking everything.
And yeah.
Music, if, I mean, people that have listened to the show know that like a big part of my game experiences is the music.
Sure, me too.
The way that they pull emotion out of you, man. Yeah. And he has got that on a fucking tap, dude. He knows what he's doing.
Yes.
Very, very impactful.
Yeah.
And again, like Bioshock, like I think you do a demo of the opening of this game, mm-hmm. you'll buy it. I mean, that's what Bioshock was for me. It's like, I don't know who played that demo of Bioshock and didn't want to play it immediately.
Right.
And that's kind of how I felt with this game.
Like, we hope that's the case.
Yeah. I know, like when you break through the clouds and you see the ocean, like I took note, like my breathing quickened. I got a little like
yes.
My feet slid forward.
Yeah, it evokes a physical response from you, and the music plays a big part of that, mm-hmm. man. So, mm-hmm. brah fucking oh, dude, Dave.
Yes, Dave. Killing it. Dave is beyond talented. I'm very lucky to be working with a guy like
him. Yeah, absolutely, man. So, when did you like originally get the idea for this game? Like,
It was August 17th, 2004.
Wow, that
yeah. Okay, I was sitting out on my back porch.
Damn,
I was intoxicated.
cheers
to say the least. I guess I could say creatively it's one of those things that my creative process is to pack a lot of stuff into my head that I feel like is quality and let it kind of rumble around in there and out comes ideas, and this was just one of a number of ideas I've had. But you know, when you create a lot of different things, you don't know which ones of those are going to turn into something, and that's sort of this situation. There's been tons of other ideas, tons of other attempts that I've made at different things, and this is one of the ones that stuck. So you can't predict when a team is going to pick up on an idea and want to make it, and it just so happened in this situation that the right people were available at the right time to do the early concept work, and that was what got a lot of people interested to work on the project. And then, you know, I had already worked with Dave on a different music project for almost a year at that point, and you know, I was like, hey, I want to make a video game, so you know, here's some music that I like, and I played it for him, and that's kind of what I'm going for, you know, and then just let him do what his thing, and then I come back over and we work and iterate on it, you know, just like every other piece of the project. And that's sort of how everything got engaged in the early days.
How big is your team at this point? I know.
Yeah, I think we're at like 11 now.
Okay.
I don't know if you want any more elaboration on that.
Yeah, I mean, feel free to name them all. Like, give them some.
Sure.
Credit,
yeah.
Man.
Let's do that. Oh boy, if I forget somebody, I'm going to be in trouble. all right. So there's Dave Nelson, who we've talked about, who is I would consider him the lead developer and lead music guy. I know that's a lot to put on two. He wears two very big hats and does a very good job at both.
So far, man,
he is, like me, what they call multi-potentialist, which is somebody who is kind of a master of many different trades, Renaissance man, something like that. then you have my partner. I should have mentioned him first, Stefan Philippe Auguste, and he's been a friend of mine for 16 years. We went to school together and have roomed together and things like that, and he was who helped me develop the concept. So I came to him with kind of a half-baked idea, and then he helped me develop it into the full game. So I consider him co-creator, co-writer. And then he also helped me form the LLC and has been there every step of the way to help me manage the team and keep things moving along. And then you have Elisa Kober, who's our animator. She's animated Yep. And
she does very good work.
Yeah. And she's been there pretty much since the beginning. Then you have Daryl Dempsey, who has done some VR experiences and came on board like about halfway through last year, three quarters of the way through last year. And he's sort of our scene environment artist. He's done a lot of the iterations of the ship and the we call it the Stingray, the submersible that you're in.
Okay.
Like that latest model that you saw that's like black and kind of has some teal looking glowing lights and stuff, that was Daryl's model, but based on all the concept art from Cortland, who I should mention, Cortland Winslow.
And I want to come back to Cortland.
Yeah. Cortland's an extremely talented guy. He specializes in underwater art, and I looked at his portfolio and was very impressed, and I said, I have a game I'm making underwater. You want to do some art for it? And I would also be remiss to mention a guy who's no longer on the project, but who was really foundational in helping me find the characters, and that's Claudio Rodvil. He is a German artist. Well, he's half Canadian and half Mexican, living in Germany. He and I iterated a lot in the early days to try to find out what Yep and find Lon and what do they look like and how do they interact together. He also subcontracted to a guy named Matt Vince, who did some environment art for us in those early days. Let's see, who am I missing? I feel bad for whoever I'm missing and who's listening to this. We have two biz dev people, Amy Goodnewt and Susie Sabin, who are doing a kick-ass job getting us set up for funding and things, like working on the business plan. I should just look down the list.
Yeah, and while you're doing that, I would just like
I feel
to,
like I'm
you know,
almost done.
Throw it out there. Sure. And just be clear here. I was able to secure this interview due to my mutual friendship
yes.
with Amy Goodnewt.
Yes.
But, you know, I would like to also give a thank you to Amy for setting this up. This is fucking huge. It's pretty fucking amazing. And you got a great thing going here, too, girl. So,
bravo. Yeah, Amy's done a fantastic job for me and us. And she and I both have very high standards of quality for each other.
Yeah.
And we all have high standards of quality for each other. And sometimes that means we butt up heads against each other. But in the end, it's a very democratic process in how we make this game, and so as a result, the person whose idea isn't quite up to the quality standard will get outvoted, and that oftentimes includes me. and the other guy I absolutely would be remiss to mention, the only reason I didn't think to mention him first was because he's the newest member of our team, and that's Josh Corvinus, and he is the one who is doing all of our like interface development. So he has done the holographic UI. He has done a lot with Yep and how Yep moves, and you know, we still got a lot of work to do, but he's been doing a lot of the pathfinding development and controls work and things like that. So couldn't do it without Josh. And so yeah, every person on the team has been, and I'll mention my brother too. He's done a little bit of work with us. He's a UX developer, architect himself. and he's done been getting into film, and he's done some of our film work.
Are you talking about the YouTube videos that you have?
YouTube videos. He and I collaborated on those. He's also one of the few that I know that I would call a multi-potential. And he's like knows a number of different disciplines.
Very cool. Well, Life of Lawn, you said, is more like a kind of a journey experience, but there are heavy puzzle elements in it. Is that correct?
I wouldn't say heavy, but I would say high impact or very engaging level of puzzle elements. It's not going to be, move up to a keypad and slide a little slider around to solve a puzzle kind of thing. It's not going to be like that at all. It's going to be come into an environment, look around at the environment, try to understand where you look at where you need to go, and you'll have to kind of solve the environment. The environment will be the puzzle, and you'll have to use Yep and your own. There's another gameplay mechanic which I won't mention yet.
Okay, that's what I was curious about too.
There are three other gameplay mechanics that unfold throughout the game. That
which is good. It's a progression.
It will be a progression, and it will keep things very interesting, and it also dovetails really nicely into the story and how things are going. So you'll get story changes, and with those story changes will come changes in the gameplay.
So again, feel free to answer or not. But
sure,
is it gonna?
Like, I don't want to spoil it, but
yeah, exactly. And I don't want to either. I'm big on not spoiling.
I'll say this: what you just played was the when I originally wrote the long form story of this, which is now in its third draft, but I think it's pretty much the final draft now. This was originally what you just played would have been considered the first half of the prologue, and there's 15 chapters. You're essentially what you've played there, I would call the first 3 to 5% of the game, basically. So there's a lot to go.
So my one thing was, is there something that makes, does it become more interactive with the environment?
Yes.
Okay. So that was my thing.
Yes.
So, okay.
Mm-hmm.
So then, that'll, again,
you got to crawl, walk, run. You know, you got to.
Exactly. Yeah.
My expectation with people who play this game is that many of them will never have tried VR before, and so it's very intentional. You start first place you're in is a theater, and there's no interaction. Second place you're in, you're in a cutscene, and there's no interaction, but you're moving. Third major scene you're in, you can move. Fourth major scene, you'll have some interaction, and we're going to work our way up.
Gotcha.
So it's a very standard progression of teaching the player how to play the game.
Well, again, from the short bit I played, my word means dick, but I would absolutely recommend this as a first stop, first experience for VR, because you have taken a lot of steps to make it friendly to people.
Right.
I mean, that's going to go a long way, and I think it should be something that a lot of people lead off with. I would absolutely recommend
it. I hope so,
So you said there's 15 chapters.
Yeah.
Rough estimate of overall length?
Don't know yet.
Don't know.
It's also probably going to depend on how people.
Exactly.
Yeah. And by the way, my team would probably be killing me if they heard me saying it's 15 chapters. We're calling it three acts.
Fair enough. Okay.
It's a little bit lopsided in the way the chapters work out in the acts, but just think of it as three parts.
Okay.
And it will be episodic. That's the plan, anyways. Right now, as of right now, the plan is to release episodically. So there would be. We're still talking through. We don't know the financials yet, but we're still talking through what kind of. We have an initial release schedule like planned, assuming funding and things like that. Mm-hmm. And the three pieces of the game would be sold at a lower cost than one full game.
Kind of like a season pass.
I mean, you could get a season pass under this model. Yeah, and this will be to let players jump in for a lower cost and get a sense of what the game is going to be like, and also to build some anticipation for what happens next in the story.
And sort of, I mean, more of like an icebreaker to the world of VR.
Yeah.
I mean, I could see it as that too. Just, hey man, let us take you through. We know what we're doing. And
sure.
What are you writing down there, beauty boy?
Writing some more questions.
Go ahead.
I think they're more towards the end of it.
Okay, well.
But
I got another
one. Mine are more
right. Like, okay, so you've done regular development. You've obviously switched to VR, and I'm sure that there are. But what are some major differences development-wise for VR compared to just a 2D side-scroller?
Right. A big difference is has to do with human centricity. In a traditional computer desktop game, there really does not have to be any human centricity whatsoever to tell a story or to give somebody a gameplay element. Mm-hmm. You could be a pixel on a screen, and you can enjoy that game.
In fact, in Thomas Was Alone, you are a pixel.
You are a pixel in that game, yeah. And so the difference here with VR is that you are the star, and that really changes. It's you're no longer looking through a keyhole at the game, you're in the game, and that's a huge difference. So a lot of the changes in how you build this don't necessarily always have to come down to writing more lines of code or building 3D models in a different way or doing animation in a different way. It has to do a lot more with ergonomics and how you construct the game around the player, how you show an interface or no interface, how you unfold a story or a sequence of events, because we have a sense of persistence in our perception of reality, and we live life moment to moment. Well, that's a little bit different than a game, because a screen game, you can play it and you're not fully immersed. You can hit pause and you can walk away. But in a virtual reality game, you're in that world and you're sucked in, and you're probably not going to get up until there's some kind of rest or something like that, unless something is pulling you out of the game. So that's a huge difference in more about how the game is played, and because the game is played in a different way, you're going to make some very different decisions, or you should be making some very different decisions in how you make the game. So it's is it going to be I think ultimately it will make creating games easier in the long run, because we'll be able to make games from within VR, so you're basically building the world from within. I think that's going to be really cool. You can already start to do that in the newer Unity and Unreal builds that they're coming out with. Other than that, I think the biggest focus for people is going to have to be understanding how the brain works as best they can, and understanding about how to construct a world around a player, and not assuming that just because things work a certain way in old traditional game development that's going to be the same thing as you move to VR.
Would you compare the shift to VR a shift like from 2D to 3D, where just
no,
things
it's
are gonna
more fundamental than that.
It is.
Yeah,
okay.
Because you're really it's the rare game that get a hold of you enough to cause you to essentially form new memories around that and take those with you and incorporate those into who you are. But in a VR game, you are going through those events. Mm-hmm. And I guarantee you, if I asked you any question about what you just experienced in Life of Lon, you probably could tell me all of that, because it was like you were really there.
It really was. I can remember.
And how many demos have you played that you could remember in great detail? And I mean, we've played a lot of demos, and there are some that really do that. But
BioShock, that's it.
Sure. For me, it was when I was a kid, Final Fantasy VII's demo. I mean, I was so like taken away by that. You know, I think that's going to be a huge distinction here, is that we're toying with people's brains a lot more fundamentally than we have in the past, and we're causing players to form new memories in a much more tangible way.
So, do you in the future see VR becoming the definitive way, or do you think there will always be a place for the TV 2D representation?
Yeah. Well, Palmer Luckey, the founder of Oculus, has called VR the last medium, and the reason for that is because with good enough VR hardware, you will eventually be able to replicate any experience that you have in any of the previous mediums. You will be able to sit down in front of a TV or a movie screen, or read a book, or do whatever you want in VR. And because of that, I think the economics of the old way of doing things are simply going to cause those things to become boutique and interesting to people who are interested in the way things used to be.
So
it'll
like
take a long time.
People
but
that are really still into NES games. Like
yeah,
vinyl. Retro
absolutely.
Games.
It'll be a black and white TV, black and white movies. Those will all be things that people will look at, you know, not our generation, maybe not even the next generation to some degree, but the next generation after that will look back even at our 4K movies on a flat screen and say, this is so archaic, because they're going to say, where's everything else?
Yeah.
Where's the rest of it?
Why am I not?
Am I not in here?
Does that make you kind of sad?
Why would that make me sad?
Oh, because it's a kind of old way is dying out, or like it's the twilight of what you fell in love with, what we all fell in love with.
Isn't that the way of things, though? The old dies and the new is born. I mean, it's a simultaneously happy and sad thing.
I'm going to miss it, but at the same, I look forward to where, especially now experiencing it, I keep coming back to this too. The ability to immerse yourself into the world is just second to none, man. Like, in that short time, the range of emotions I went through, I've never experienced that with a game. Like, especially on that level. Like, when Yep showed up, I was like, oh, hey, I know him from things. But then I was like, he's friendly. He's not going to betray me.
Right.
I know of. That's a twist in the...
Spoiler alert. Yeah, Yep all along.
I mean, it could go that way. And that would again, completely blow my mind if it ends up that way. Because he's so very trusting. And it's like you feel safe around him. And then once the world opens up, it's a little frightening. You see, you don't know what's out there and what's around the next corner. And that's what I wanted to get to, coming back to Cortland, art. What is he, your art supervisor, your art director, your main artist?
His title is lead artist.
Lead art, okay.
And, you know, I'm an artist too. I have 2.5 years of art schooling myself and 1.5 years of graphic design. I have two different degrees. So I've spent a lot of time with pencil and paper drawing. And but I didn't pursue it as my primary career because I'm too easily bored, I guess, of everything I learned. So, but Cortland is far better than I am, far, far better. So our working relationship usually comes down to me explaining to him what the story is and what and showing him some inspiration from other games that I like, and then him kind of going off and doing his own thing, bringing it back, and the whole team looks at it together. They all know the story, and we look at the art and we say, does this work with what we're trying to do? And there are things like the Stingray, which are sitting in, which went through an insane amount of revision. Insane. So many iterations. There probably must have been 100 iterations of that before we got it figured out. And 3D models, probably like 4 or 5 iterations of the 3D model, because you have to sit in it, you have to see what it looks like from within VR. So, but Cortland's role in this has really been setting the tone of the style of the game and what all the marketing collateral looks like, you know, the website and this kind of stuff. And this is an attempt, and I know the game doesn't look exactly like this, but it's an attempt to pull you into, you're going to be in kind of a fantasy, and it's got some children's book kind of elements to it, but it's also got a darker tone to it as well, that it will be approachable for children and for younger people and for women and people who are non-gamers and maybe even older people. But then there will be a core hardcore gamer element who will look at it and say, this is a really polished experience. And absolutely, I think those people are going to appreciate what we've done with the writing. So we're trying to get people in based on the approachableness of Yap and in the game, but then the hardcore gamers, as they dig into the lore and dig into how the game unfolds, there's going to be a lot to talk about on the internet, I think.
So recently, Cortland showed off a bunch of his artwork for a lot of the aquatic life in the game. And I'm just curious what the overall role of them will be. Like, a lot of them look a bit frightening and really cool looking.
Yes.
But is there going to be a hostile element to them? Like, is there a way to defend?
I can't tell you exactly details of those kinds of things so much without really spoiling the experience for people. But expect to be surprised.
Okay.
Which kind of defeats the purpose, by the way.
Exactly.
Expect to be surprised. But you will be surprised a lot in this game. You probably were surprised a lot in the demo.
Yeah.
Right? It probably did some things you were not expecting it to.
And I'm totally expecting the same answer, and that is fine. But like, also on the same vein, are they going to be used in a bit of a puzzle solving way?
I can't go into detail about that. But these are questions I have. You're asking all the right questions, and we have a lot of really interesting things coming.
People should just experience it.
I think you should. When we get the demo out, I think people should experience it and let us know what they think about it, and that will really help us gain the kind of traction that we need to get the whole project funded, because this is going to be a kind of a monumental undertaking considering how much story there is left to tell in the game. So we are going to need some outside help to get that done.
All right, speaking of VR,
sure.
You're obviously very excited about it, the way you've talked, and you've already kind of said about Life of Lawn that you're kind of making the game that you want.
Yes.
What other experiences do you want from VR? besides like what you're making?
Yeah, great question. Great question. I want to work a virtual workplace. I want to be able to work with my team in VR and have us be able to create our own environments and share those environments with each other and work collaboratively with each other in spatial ways. And then be able to check out builds that we're working on right there without taking out the headset and get right into the work. That would be, to me, is I can't wait for that to come. And by the best predictions I've been able to get out of other people who are in the industry, that's probably like 2 years away or something like that. I would love it to be sooner. So anyone who's listening, please make that. I don't have the time, money, or manpower to make that kind of thing happen, and I'm sure there are a lot of bigger studios who are working on that kind of thing. Making music in VR, I think, will be really interesting because there's a spatial element to it, and you'll be able to almost like conduct an orchestra and be able to say, come in here more, and you know, bring up those strings, you know, and there's going to be a lot of, you know, I love music, and I think it's the universal language, and I think everybody loves music, so VR is going to have a lot of really interesting possibilities when it comes to music.
And I think my thing on that, I wonder, like, you know, special artist performances in VR.
Absolutely.
That you can sign up for, and like they start at this time, and you can do whatever, like you're free form to move through that. I think that could have really insane qualities, like, or even just like,
I'll tell you what, you can upcharge a movie ticket when it comes out. Like, I'll pay $20 to not have to leave my house.
That, you know, to see Captain America.
Yeah, like when Civil War comes out. Yeah, charge me $25, $30
to see it through the eyes of Tony Stark with all the
screens. Oh, no, I don't even care. You give me that theater view that they had, and that's more than enough for me.
You guys should check out Gear VR, and they have a Netflix theater you can sit in and watch Netflix. There's also, I believe, a social kind of mode where you can sit in a theater with your friends and watch a movie, watch Netflix.
All right,
I definitely am going to be
ignorant, but
investigating.
I want to hear more VR about that later.
Too. Yeah, I mean,
I didn't make that, so you can go look. You can go podcast. Google that if you want. Yeah.
Life of Lawn is better than Netflix VR.
I wouldn't say that. We're just putting that out there.
No, sorry, John Carmack. Sorry.
Like influence, people who are big inspirations to you, especially on that development wise. What really?
Well, I have a list.
Oh yeah, okay.
It's at the bottom of the website because I have a with much respect to section, and I will just read off that list.
I'm interested in one name, and I'll see if it pops up.
It's lifeoflawn.com, by the way. So the ones I have on the. On the list, Laird Eastman, you know, the guys who created Ninja Turtles, Kojima, Hideo Kojima.
That's the one I was looking for. Okay, fucking A.
George Kojima. Lucas, Steven Spielberg,
ego.
Bob Zemeckis, Christopher Nolan.
Yeah. Okay.
Inafune, or however you pronounce his name.
Yep. Kenji Inafune.
Yep.
There's me.
Yeah, I love Mega Man.
Yeah.
Huge Mega Man fan. Eric Chahi, creator of Another World. Gabe Newell. Can't forget Gabe.
Valve.
Romero and Carmack.
Of course. I mean, you called yourself the Romero of this
Of the
organization.
Duo. Yeah. Jenova Chen, Shigeru Miyamoto, and Nobuo Uematsu. So,
man, fucking A. I love Uematsu, too. He's one of the best.
Yes. Every single one of them, great choices.
Yeah.
Those are my top influences.
I would not argue, and I can see it, and I hope to see even more of it when I play Life of Law. I fully expect to play this game to its end. Like, I love it, man. I'm excited to see where it goes.
I'm looking forward to telling the story.
So, a rough estimate on when you expect to maybe have a release, or at least a demo?
Well, we're looking at releasing the demo this summer.
Okay.
And the content that you saw, we would like to take it to the next major beat and take you through what a puzzle in Life of Lawn looks like.
Okay.
It will depend on, you know, we're trying to get funding, and being self-funded is very difficult, being bootstrapped. And we've gotten this far, but it's there are other financial aspects at play, my day job being one, because I'm a contractor typically. So there's a number of things that will affect that. But if we can secure the funding that we're looking for, because we're going to VRWC here next week in Bristol, UK, and then we're going to the VR World Congress, and then we're going to the Silicon Valley VR Meetup Expo in San Jose, and that's towards the end of April. And then we're going up to LA, and we've got a few people we're going to be meeting and stuff there. So we've got some expos, some meetings, and we're going to try to see what kind of, we're going to shake that money tree.
Excellent. I wish you the best of luck in those.
Thank you.
I get, you know, I'm sure the one question on people's minds listening, crowdfunding, any interest or any
I don't think there's enough crowd to fund from yet.
Okay.
That's for the kind of money that we need to make this game. I mean, this is not a big, I wouldn't call this a big budget game. This isn't going to be a AAA title or anything, but it needs a healthy enough budget for us to get through the semi-ambitious beats that we need to get through.
Okay. So yeah, and that's
that's the way I would put it. There are far more ambitious beats coming in the second two games, but the first still has some big scenes, I guess I would put it.
And I guess I appreciate you recognizing that fact and not just going for the crowdfunding just to get the money to try it. I mean,
right.
I've seen that happen a lot, and games fall flat.
Sure.
And I would hate to see that happen. So I appreciate you're really willing to put in that legwork and try to make it work behind the scenes. That's not the right.
It's
way.
A lot. It's one thing to make a game. It's a whole other thing to try to run a game company. And that I would strongly recommend, if anybody listening is thinking about creating a game company, think about it. Think again. Like spend a lot of time before you decide to do that. I think a lot of people want to make games, and they probably would be more satisfied working for someone else than they would actually trying to make their own thing.
Their own, yeah.
Of this level of scale. I mean, making a small indie game, that's another thing, a one-man kind of game. But I think the most ambitious examples we have of that are like Minecraft and Fez. But other than that, I mean, most of your one-man jobs are clearly one-man. Oh, and I would say Stardew Valley would be another one. Sure. And a lot of people have talked about, what's the one that's Earthbound-ish kind of?
Undertale?
Undertale. Yeah.
So, but those kind of games require almost savant level of talent to be able to make as one person.
Oh, well,
for the rest of us for the rest of us mere mortals, we have to work on teams, you know. So
we talked a little bit about your love for the Final Fantasy series, but what other games and, you know, even movies do you really enjoy? What are some of your faves? We talked earlier about the whole Back to the Future series. You're a giant fan of that.
I'm a huge fan of what I call the clockwork kind of genre, and that would be movies, films, games, media that are written in such a way where all the pieces fit together in a complex way, and that ultimately results in unfolding in a much larger way. So you have you have smaller vignettes, smaller pieces that form a larger, more cohesive whole, and I'll give you some examples of what I mean. Of course, we've got the Back to the Future trilogy. Each movie acts independently, but also fits into a larger story, and each piece of that is all very carefully put together. Christopher Nolan is a master at this. Memento, my favorite movie. I've got the Remember Sammy Jenkins tattoo.
Fucking A.
That to me is an example of a movie that is so tightly put together that you can really find no fault in it. I mean, I've watched it more than a dozen times, and I never find fault in it. Inception, another kind of example of that. Time Crimes, Los Cronocrimenes, or however you pronounce it. It's a great movie.
I fucking love Time Crimes.
Yeah.
And his follow-up, Extraterrestrial.
I haven't seen Extraterrestrial. I'm a huge fan of the time travel genre. I've seen most of the big ones.
Seen Primer?
I've seen Primer. Yeah.
Primer is fucking cool.
I don't know. The problem I have with Primer is, although it's a great concept, I think that to some degree, I think the percentage of the audience who can understand Primer is so small that it kind of hurts the movie in a way.
It
alienates.
A lot of people are very turned off the first. Yeah. They're like, what the fuck? Why did you make me watch this?
I think Back to the Future, in my opinion, is such, I have such high praise, the thing about that movie is the faults that you can find in its time travel mechanic are so minor. I mean, they're so minor.
Yeah.
There are a few, but people will argue about those things, but you've got a movie that's so well put together, but yet so friendly and so approachable and so fun and so happy and nostalgic and everything, and it makes you feel a certain way when you watch it. You almost forget that there's this convoluted time travel story going on in the background, and that's what's, and why is it so compelling? Because of Doc and Marty. Because of the main characters. And that's what's missing in a lot of VR nowadays that I hope Life of Lan sets the tone for, which is there's a lot of empty world kind of games where you travel through a world and it's just you and you're all alone. Well, that's a very lonely experience. So give me a friend. Give me a companion. Let me go through that world with someone else.
Yep. Did you see what I did there?
I did see what you did there.
Yeah. I don't know. Sorry, I'm terrible with puns. I drop them all the time.
I'll give you that pun. That was clever.
That's really, I mean... That's hitting everything that I've got.
For the bonus round.
So
how can people find out more about Life of Lawn? And then if there's a way, is there anything they can do to support you if they want to?
Yes. So you can learn about the project. You can go to lifeoflawn.com. You'll see a nice kind of rich website experience.
And we will link that as well, too.
There's blockinterval.com, which is our studio website. You can learn more about what we're doing.
Somebody can put the text right here
when
they're editing the video. That's not me.
Should I have been looking at the camera this whole time?
No,
anyways. I just look up in there. Anyways, so those are the two big hubs. You know, we're on Twitter and we're on Facebook and we're posting a lot of updates on what's going on there. I think following us on social media is a big way to help us out because it lets any interested parties know that we have a following now and we've got people who are interested in the game. And
it's what we're trying to do too, man.
It's free. Following up. You just click a button.
Yeah,
No problems. Click a little follow button. You don't even have to read our tweets. Just click click the button. I don't care.
Give us that minus number.
I don't
care
if you read it. Whatever. But no, if you're a gamer, I think you'll appreciate seeing a lot of the behind the scenes stuff that we put out there. And then, you know, when the summer rolls around, you know, if people download the game, I think we're looking at releasing the prologue or trailer or what a preview, whatever we're going to call it, as a free thing, which is a difficult thing to do when you put a year and a half of time into something to give it away for free. But we're hoping that if the community picks up on it and engages with it and enjoys it and talks about it, that's going to help us achieve the momentum that we need.
Well, and one of the benefits I think you have is that VR still at this point is a lot like the Wild West. There are things coming, but there's not a lot out there. So I think getting out early in front of it will really help you to establish things like that. Like, you will be one of the first ones that people can experience in that way. So I think that'll help you out tons. And I think that's a great way to go about it, is to just get part of it out there. I mean, your Carmack Romero Love Fest, again, that's the way they originally started it too, you know?
Right.
Let's give this one out, make them come back for more.
Right.
So, I mean, I think it's a great idea.
You have a lot of faith in the community and hope that there will be a community there that wants to pick up on it. So,
also like a crack dealer.
We will see.
First taste is free, baby.
Yeah, exactly.
First taste is free, baby.
Right.
So, where will the demo be available at? Just on the website? Are you going to put something on like Steam?
We are first taking our rounds on the expos and giving people, you know, firsthand demos.
Okay. Yeah.
We'll be talking to press. We'll be letting press try it out. This kind of stuff, podcasts. Once we've gone through that track and getting into May, then we're going to shift gears towards a releasable demo that's polished to the standard that we're pretty close, but we've still got a few months, I think, of work to polish it to get it to where it needs to be. And then we'll put it up on the we're working. We just got our HTC Vive dev kits. We got three of those. So we're working on the Vive port as well. So you'll be able to find it on the Oculus Store as well as on Steam.
Tight, man.
Well, I've got nothing else.
You got nothing else?
I told you, mine were wrap-up questions.
Yeah,
question. Wrap it up then, baby. You know what to do. Let people know where they can find us.
Hold on. Let me go.
Here's a question I have for you guys.
Okay, yeah.
Where do you think that, just fan theory, if you want to call it that, and I'm not going to react or respond to this, but where do you think this story goes?
So make sure the camera's focused on his face.
Yeah, what's little Twitch poker face.
I got some ideas. Do you have an idea?
I don't have ideas as much as things I hope it doesn't go that way.
So you have an idea of where you hope it doesn't go.
And he like explains the whole story. And then
so I'll
let you go first with your hope it doesn't go that way, because I've got some ideas.
Tell me where you hope it doesn't go so I don't go there.
The only thing I hope it doesn't go is that you kill Lon off like in Fable 2 or like Marley and Me, where it's just, you let me get attached to this character only to kill at the end of Argo and Shadow of the Colossus. Spoilers, because it just feels cheap.
But Aggro comes back.
Fuck that. It just... I'm not going to get into that. It just feels like a cheap
Are you talking
ending.
About Lon or Yap, though?
I'm sorry, Yap.
Yeah, okay. I was going
to
say...
I'm A-okay if Lon dies.
Okay.
We'll put that out there. If I die at the end to save Yap, I'm on board.
Well, wait till the sequels, but...
Okay.
Yeah, there are three sequels. I mean, so
there's two sequels. Yes, it's a trilogy.
Three games, two sequels. Let me clarify.
Yes.
Ton, and then you're the son of Lon.
Son of Lon.
That's it.
So
it's been said before, believe me, but that we don't... Yeah, go ahead.
So my idea of where I think it might end up going, at least for maybe chapter one, is that... So Lon will eventually discover that he's not alone in this underwater alien planet. There are another intelligent life form that he will interact with. And then possibly he might be, through similar to Bender in Futurama, eventually be like a chosen one or a savior type person who will come in and is destined to save these people from whatever strife or impending doom they are forced to set or encounter.
Or like Nibbler.
Nibbler too. It's something that I would see. Yep is more of a Nibbler character.
That's what I was thinking of. Yeah. Yep.
So Yep would be more of the force that guides you behind the scenes to what needs to happen for the betterment of the planet. That's my anticipation.
Yeah. Okay.
So I don't. You know.
All right.
I have no
very
idea.
Interesting theories. Very interesting theories. The story's already written, so I can't.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm not
yeah.
changing.
You
anything,
know.
But
what are your theories?
I have some pretty good ones.
So give out our contact stuff, and we'll give out the block interval stuff again, because I think
sure.
we should. So.
Yeah.
All right. So you can find Kyle and I at facebook.com/experiencegrind. Find us at twitter.com/expgrindpodcast. Go to our website, www.experiencegrind.com, where you can find our videos and the audio podcast.
I cannot believe nobody had that fucking URL still to this day. That is our website.
It was a pretty good catch.
God damn.
It was. And then
twitch.tv/experiencegrind
for Kyle's live streams.
Yeah. And YouTube, which we don't have yet, but if, again.
You search for us there.
I mean, we have YouTube, a channel, but when we get more subscribers, we'll be able to name the channel. And then we can give that name out. It'll be fucking so much better. So subscribe, please.
I feel that pain.
Yeah, it's a bummer. Yeah. You know what I'm going through.
Yep.
So in the Block Interval contacts again, please, where they can find
you
guys.
Yeah, blockinterval.com. You can also go to lifeoflon.com, of course, and then there's facebook.com/blockinterval, twitter.com/blockinterval.
And you're giving
facebook.com/lifeoflon. Yeah.
Yeah, anytime you want. And we'll share all those in our social media stuff,
great.
Too. You know, we'll pat that back. You know, that's how that goes. Dan, fucking thank you, man.
Thanks,
so
guys.
Much
yes,
for letting us
you.
Go through this and actually experience this game. That again, that was life changing for me. I was not on board with VR until today, and I am fully
we made a believer
VR
out of you.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to be preaching that gospel to everybody I meet now. So,
cool.
And I'll be talking about Life Alone because it's the only one I've experienced. In my opinion, it's the best one. So
it's the best one out of one.
Yeah, exactly, man. You
top
got that
one.
Going for you.
Yeah.
So thank you again, man. Everybody, check him out. This has been a really fucking fun episode. I have loved doing this.
Yes.
You're the man. Thank you. And we hope to see a lot of good things from you in the future, man.
Thanks
and
a lot.
Your dog is pretty awesome,
yeah.
too. I think
yeah.
he's got some really
should
bad
I show
gas,
my dog
man. I have been smelling your dog's farts like this entire episode.
I thought it was you Kyle.
No, it was not me. It was Morty. Yeah. Ah, look
this
at him.
Morty.
He's cute. He's got a terrible gut,
dog.
Though.
This is our second guest.
Morty.
He is also the most gentle biter, which I appreciate.
He's a big old sweetie.
Yeah, he is.
So, as always, thank you guys for sticking around for listening to this. If you like it, please feel free to check both of us out, Block Interval and the Experience Grind guys. We do it because we love it, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So, thank you guys as always. You're the best.
That's
grind
nice.
Out.
My name in college was The Gentle Biter.